Well, hello, saints, sinners, and all those in between. Welcome to the first episode of Chronicles Unleashed, where people detour from the road to redemption and struggle to find their way back. As you will discover, the characters in our fictional stories, as well as people in our real-life sagas, long for the same things: understanding, forgiveness, and mercy. You may even recognize pieces of your own life. Every week, Chronicles Unleashed will bring you tales of love, life, and human error. You'll be relieved to know that your own mistakes aren't as bad as you think, and even if they are, someone has done it before and been forgiven. Since truth is stranger than fiction, let's begin with actual couples whose lives went in a direction they never expected. Our first story highlights a man who was once the popular president of the mighty Teamsters Union. We call this tale, When Love Becomes a Disappearing Act. James Riddle Hoffa, Jimmy, was a feisty union organizer with a reputation for never backing down. His middle name suited him because he was, well, full of contradictions. He never went to high school, yet he understood human nature better than most experts. Jimmy was an old-fashioned, traditional kind of guy who worked constantly to protect the average person's working rights and supported everyone, regardless of race. That was pretty revolutionary at that time. And though he was tough as nails in the company of women, he preferred to be a gentleman. He refused to smoke, drink, cuss, or make off-color jokes. In 1936, 18-year-old Josephine Pozawak became well acquainted with Jimmy's reputation for never backing down. She met him while she was standing on a picket line. At that time, he was an organizer for Teamsters Local 22. It was love at first sight. Jimmy later described the experience as one that left him feeling like he had been hit in the chest with a blackjack. Wow. After only a few months, he asked Josephine to marry him, and she agreed. On September 24, 1936, he and Josephine made their pledges before the Justice of the Peace in Bowling Green, Ohio, and it was there that they began their personal union. Jimmy and Josephine later had two children, a boy, James, and a girl, Barbara. While Jimmy's life seemed like a Norman Rockwell painting on the outside, his life was not that simple. Though Jimmy was very heavy-handed in his approach at work, he found it difficult to discipline his children, so Josephine had to assume that role. But a larger issue was Jimmy's union organizing. While he was a hero to many hard-working people and negotiated profitable contracts on their behalf, Jimmy had made some powerful enemies. One of those enemies included Bobby Kennedy, who was the then Attorney General of the United States and President Kennedy's brother. Following a series of angry interactions with the Attorney General's office, Jimmy was indicted for fraud. At that time, he and his family were hounded by the media, and he was accused of being involved with organized crime. In 1964, when the dust settled, he was convicted of jury tampering, fraud, sending Teamster pension funds to mafia-controlled casinos in Las Vegas, and conspiracy. In 1967, he began serving his sentence. During Jimmy's incarceration, Josephine supported him and worked tirelessly on getting him released. Josephine was there for him when he came home, waiting with open arms. Conditions for Jimmy's return from prison had been carefully negotiated. Jimmy didn't know it, but one condition of his release was that he couldn't be involved in union activities for 10 years. While Jimmy was glad to regain his freedom, he was furious that he was banned from holding union office. He therefore fought relentlessly to regain his union title as president. Allegedly, he harassed the then president of the Teamsters Union, Frank E. Fitzsimmons, and threatened organized crime members that he would expose their illegal activities if they didn't support his return. On July 30th, 1975, Jimmy told his wife he would be going to a meeting. He later called her and explained that the two people he was supposed to meet stood him up and that he'd be home soon. Those two people were linked to organized crime. She knew that something was really wrong when he didn't return, because in 39 years of marriage, he had never once been late to dinner. Sadly, he had vanished without a trace. Josephine continued to pressure authorities to look for him, but he was never found. It was commonly thought that members of organized crime preferred Fitzsimmons because he was easier to control. The theory is that when Jimmy pushed the issue and insisted upon getting his old job back, they killed him and disposed of his body. Josephine was heartbroken and said, "I've got to find out what happened to my man. Other women lose their husbands, but they at least have the comfort of knowing where they died and when they're where they're buried." She eventually told her children that she would not live the 7 years needed to declare him legally dead. True to her word, she died 5 years later on September 12, 1980. Ultimately, Jimmy Hoffa was hugely successful in improving working conditions for the people he represented. His two surviving children followed in his footsteps and improved the lives of working-class families. His daughter Barbara served as chief attorney in the Division of Civil Disability and Workers' Rights in Missouri. And his son, James P. Hoffa, became a labor attorney and is the current president of the International Brotherhood of the Teamsters Union. That's quite a legacy. Jimmy would be proud. Our second story is entitled Relationship Survival, and it is about an ambitious couple who experienced the ups and the downs of show business. Remember Joan Rivers, the madcap comedienne and fiery host of the Fashion Police? Although she died rich and famous, there was a time when her life was very different. It all began in New York in 1965 when Joan met Edgar Rosenberg. A comedy writer, Joan was working on The Tonight Show, which then starred Johnny Carson. Edgar had a thriving career in television and film production and public relations. He needed a comedy scriptwriter for a movie project he was completing. After Joan was referred to him, he hired her. There was an instant connection. Edgar's sophistication and his obsession with show business attracted Joan. Joan's ambition, raw talent, and potential enamored Edgar. Though Joan's first marriage was brief and ended in annulment, Joan and Edgar were so taken with each other, they married 4 days after they met. They had their daughter Melissa in 1968. The couple worked continuously to promote Joan's unpredictable career and other business interests. Due to their efforts, Joan's career skyrocketed, and she was celebrated as a trailblazing female comedian and a groundbreaking comedienne. In fact, Johnny Carson was so impressed with her work, he hired her to substitute for him on his show. However, as Edgar and Joan would later see, they would be forced to face some major challenges. While Joan's comedy scripts and stand-ups were highly successful, her relationship with Edgar will, let's just say it was complicated. They both brought heavy emotional baggage to their relationship. Joan was the product of parents who frequently argued over money matters, and they disagreed with her decision to be in show business. Like her mother, Joan loved to spend money. Edgar's early life was very different. During his youth, he and his family frequently moved to other countries to avoid Nazi oppression during World War II. These frequent moves affected his view of stability. Then there was the problem of Joan's contract with The Tonight Show. When it was shortened, she asked about it and was waiting for a response. While she waited, she received an offer from a rival station, Fox 5, to have her own show during the same time slot as The Tonight Show. She thought about it, and she took it. Johnny Carson felt betrayed and was enraged, so much so that he blackballed her. Now, at Fox 5, they loved Joan, but they didn't get along with Edgar. When her employers insisted that Edgar leave as her manager, she threatened to leave. So the network fired them both. Blackballed by Carson and jobless, the future looked bleak for Joan and Edgar. Harboring tremendous guilt about her decision to stand by him, Edgar became extremely depressed. By her own admission, Joan was sometimes unfaithful. Then there was Edgar's inability to manage money very well. Given Joan's family history of financial problems, Edgar probably felt uncomfortable discussing money matters with her. As a result, during their marriage, Joan was unaware that they were millions of dollars in debt. In addition to a series of other ailments, Edgar had a quadruple bypass, mental illness, and worried that he was becoming a burden to his family. Eventually, Edgar, overwhelmed by his illnesses, committed suicide. The real tragedy was that this couple failed to recognize that the real Edgar Rosenberg had disappeared long before his death. Gradually, he had abandoned his own career to promote Joan's and was known only as her manager. Their daughter Melissa was left to deliver the awful news of Edgar's death to Joan. Her grief was immeasurable and compounded by the fact that Melissa blamed her for Edgar's death. Thankfully, the story doesn't end here. While their relationship may not have had the fairy tale ending they had imagined, Joan and Edgar thought they belonged together. They were both fiercely ambitious and they loved show business. They appreciated one another's differences. Joan described their marriage as a good one because they filled in each other's gaps. She said that she gave Edgar warmth and that he gave her style. When asked why he married Joan so quickly, Edgar said, "I was in love." In fact, according to him, it was his bad health and his inability to further Joan's career that caused his depression. Unfortunately, poor communication between the two prevented Joan from understanding the severity of his illness until it was just much too late. It was as though she felt that if she worked hard enough to solve their financial and career problems, Edgar's depression would just disappear. After Edgar's death, Joan was so miserable, she considered suicide. But ever the survivor, she found a way to forgive herself for her mistakes and to hope again. Joan reconnected with their daughter, reinvented herself, paid off all their debts, and became a multimillionaire. Ironically, in death, Edgar got what he always wanted, Joan's success. In both cases, obsession was a major factor in the outcome of these marriages. James R. Hoffa was passionate about the rights of working people and had a no retreat, ride or die attitude. While this made him wildly successful, it also led to his downfall. Edgar and Joan prospered from their fixation on show business and celebrity, but this also in part led to Edgar's death. Don't judge. We all have qualities that can make us and break us. Get unleashed and in one sentence name one quality you have that makes you both successful and dangerous. Weigh in with Chronicles Unleashed on Facebook and Instagram or on Twitter at Chronicles, capital U-N-L-E-1, Chronicles, capital U-N-L-E-1. Join us next week when Chronicles Unleashed features part one of a fictional story entitled The Good Book and the Book. Listen to the moral dilemmas facing a popular televangelist and his family. Invite your friends and family to join us and become unleashed. We only get paid when we get played, so hit us up every week. Special thanks to Mix Kit and Michael Ramirez C. for the Chronicles Unleashed theme song, Scripted Life. This is Donna Edwards signing off, reminding you that every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. There is hope for us all.